good witch or a bad bitch, bad
bitch, bad bitch. I've been a rebel all my life.
We will not remain hidden figures. We have names.
Oh, if this naughty to rouge your lips, shake your shoulders, shake your hips, and let a lady confess I want to be best.
I didn't kid you, did I? Well, now you know.
Hey, Ham! Hi, Deanna! Oh, my God.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of Cunts Unplugged.
Okay, that's the name of the show.
Yeah, that'll be really Facebook-friendly.
Cunts Unplugged. Welcome to Cunts Unplugged, the show about cunts, and cunts.
Yeah, I think the title of our show is now Cunts Unplugged.
Although is that very cis normative?
Well, I don't know. Unplugged. Cunts Unplugged. Oh no.
Oh boy.
I'm thinking too much.
I am too.
Okay, let's switch back to Good Witches, Bad Bitches.
Okay, Good Witches, Bad Bitches it is. Welcome to Good Witches, Bad Bitches.
Welcome.
I'm Deanna.
I almost said
I'm Hannah. Which... Oh boy. Oh boy, that's where I'm at.
We can take that again if you would like.
Nope.
Take two.
Nope.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right.
I'm Deanna.
What's the show about, Deanna?
Show about ladies. Here then, now, here and now, nope. Then and now, here and there, ladies all the time. Oh boy. I think this is heat stroke. I think I'm having heat stroke.
All right, guys, welcome to the heat stroke episode.
Where I've lost my fucking mind.
What's the episode or what's the show about?
This show is about ladies throughout history. Sometimes from today, we just talk about ladies that we think need to be known. For good things, bad things, all the things in between. Nobody's perfect. Hashtag nobody's perfect.
Hashtag nobody's perfect.
Pobody's nerfect, am I right?
Pobody's nerfect.
Ah!
Including us.
Pobody's nerfect.
Very clearly.
Oh, God, I'm so far from that.
Wow, yeah.
Hello!
How many times can we say that?
Hi!
So, before we started this just fucked up intro...
I think it's going to be great. quick bit of housekeeping.
Uh-huh.
Some of you may have noticed, some of you maybe didn't. We did some minor rebranding on Facebook for some crazy-ass reasons.
Yeah.
Our podcast is Good Witches, Bad Bitches. On most of our social media platforms, we're GWBB Podcast. And we've had to change our Facebook group name to GWBB Podcast because while it lets us have the name Good Witches, Bad Bitches Podcast, when we try to advertise and share our podcast through ads, we were denied because there's a profane word. It was so funny when I got the email because the ad I tried to, the copy for the ad had no profanity. And so when it came back and was like, it's been disapproved because of profanity. And I was like, wait, why? And it took me a second to realize, oh, it's literally in our name.
Yeah.
Which is insane because you can select your audience. And I chose people like 18 to 65. We should be able to promote something with profanity in it.
Right.
To 18-year-olds.
Well, and part of why we are called Good Witches, Bad Bitches is to let people know.
That's the point.
This is the podcast. Like, we curse. We talk about people, you know, we don't use, like, super savory language all the time. And having that in the name lets you know.
What you're getting yourself into. Yeah, but, so we, by this point, have changed it. Hopefully that means that we can advertise now.
Mm-hmm.
Help us grow, which is cool. And thank you guys for all of your rates, reviews, subscribes, which also helps us grow.
Yeah, very much.
But that has been a thing that's happened, and we wanted to explain why, because Facebook is weird. We also tried to change the name so that it would have asterisks in it, and of course that's not allowed either. Oh, Facebook. I think it's just, there's too many old people on, like, old people on Facebook who are like, oh, I don't like that. My granddaughter curses on Facebook. And so now all of a sudden there's all this rules about profanity. Anyways.
Yeah. But that's the reason.
That's the reason.
And that's a little bit of housekeeping for
new
ya.
And improved GWBB podcast.
Yeah, man. And otherwise, you can find us under, you know, GWBB podcast on Twitter and on Instagram.
That's and that's our website,
been,
too, right?
It's our website is gwbbpodcast.com.
Yep.
And that's, you know, if you aren't sure where you can listen to this, like, that, our website has everything.
All of our episodes.
All of our episodes. So, yeah. So, that's just a little bit of, you know.
Now, on to more fun stuff.
More fun stuff. Like, cunt. Oh, wait.
Cunts.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
You are getting ahead of yourself.
Because the conversation around cunts was started by the Roseanne debacle.
So, I mean, a few weeks ago, Roseanne made a super racist tweet that she later blamed on Ambien, which, you know, Ambien had a great clapback, which that's the world we live in now, where Big Pharma is somehow able to clap back in a way that's relevant and modern and liberal in a way.
Oh my God, I know.
Anyway, she compared Valerie Jarrett to a child of the Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes, which is super racist on two fronts.
And who is Valerie Jarrett? She was part of the Obama
administration.
Part
of the Obama administration. And she is part Middle Eastern and part Black. And none of that is okay.
Nope.
And then Roseanne faced consequences for her actions.
Yeah, her TV show was canceled.
And lost a lot of jobs for a lot of people because she is crazy.
I mean,
she's also like an insane Zionist too, like super pro-Israel in a very crazy way. I went down a rabbit hole looking at some
oh
of her
God.
Tweets. She buys into a lot of conspiracy theories. The woman is weird as fuck.
She's a little disturbed, honestly. Like she just, and this is part of, so this is part of what, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about this because like, Roseanne has always been this way. She has tweets dating back, you know, 10 years that say shit just like what she said about Valerie Jarrett.
Yeah, but her show wasn't as relevant.
But her show wasn't as relevant. And her show, you know, lots of people have argued that her show wouldn't be relevant without the Trump administration. Like,
well, maybe.
We keep trying to understand Trump voters and like, oh, here's a show about understanding Trump voters and sympathizing with them and like...
But what's crazy is that the original Roseanne from our growing up days, would not be kosher, forgive the pun, with Trump voters today.
Right.
Because it was literally about like a pro-union working class family who couldn't cut a break. She was like pro-women and pro-union, which is appropriate for working class families.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Yep. Yeah.
But, and I loved Roseanne when I was a kid. Like I thought it was so funny.
But she has changed.
I mean, I don't know that she necessarily has, but I mean, I think that...
Well,
well
your climate has changed.
Yes and no. I mean, I think that she's always been a certain... Like, you can go down a certain path. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. But, like, she... Yeah, she used to be much more... Like, I don't know why being pro-union today is seen as liberal. Like, that's insane to me. And I know I've talked to this on this show before, whereas, like... These coal miners are super bummed out about losing all their jobs and how being like every, first of all, everything's being taken over by machinery.
Yep.
But like, second of all, unions have been broken up. Like the reason that your coal mining job used to be a quote, good job with good salary and good benefits was because of unions.
Yep.
That's the reason why. And now like super, super insane capitalist money grubbing bullshit has broken that up because when the workers organize, they get fair treatment.
Yep.
But somehow they've convinced these people that unions are bad for them, which is bullshit. Like unions, yeah, can be a lot of like red tape, sure. But anyway. Roseanne.
Anyway, yeah. I mean, like...
But that's what Roseanne used to be.
Yeah,
used to speak to.
She used to be very... Or at least, even if she wasn't different, she felt different. I think, than she does now.
Well, we lived in a different time.
We lived in a different time.
Where being a Nazi publicly was a bad thing.
Yeah, and now it's seen as pretty cool. And
like, chill, like, I can run for office very pro-Nazi.
Oh,
literally.
God. I know.
Oh, like, and a pedophile, but that's a different situation. Virginia, what the fuck?
I know, I don't even want to talk about that guy, but just so anyone who is listening is aware, there is a man who is running for office in Virginia under the Republican Party, who is an admitted pedophile and has admitted to raping his wife, and he used to run a couple of websites that were about, you know, yay pedophilia and yay incels and yay rape fantasies, and he's talked to reporters, and he is unapologetic about that.
No shame.
And so be careful of that. Anyone who is in Virginia who is listening to this right now, go fucking just,
like,
do something.
Sorry, but what has it been okay for you to be open about being a fucking pedophile and unashamed of that fact? This is incel culture at its peak.
Since Trump was elected.
And this is that thing, like, you were talking about enforced monogamy. Those same countries are the countries who the countries who have that sort of thing going on right now are the same countries that really value purity in their wives, mm-hmm. and they're marrying children to make sure they're marrying virgins. And that shit is absurd.
And disgusting.
And that's that's what this is in
yeah.
our country. It's like a bleeding in of, like, that sort of mentality of, like, children are pure.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. Let's not defile them.
Period. Anyway.
Period.
That was, like, a weird little detour. But, like,
yeah.
you should know about those. You should know about this guy. And you should know that people support him and that he is there and he is.
I mean, he's not favored to win.
No.
But neither was Trump, so.
But yeah, and he's emboldened by the state of our country, and that's a problem.
Trump
was Roseanne.
Winning. Yeah, exactly. And her crazy batshit views.
Uh-huh.
And I'm glad she faced repercussions.
Yeah. But so.
But I think it's also bizarre that the right, because Trump's, like, firing back at that was basically like, what about people who've been mean to me? Why aren't their shows getting canceled? And it's like, I'm so sorry, but being a racist is not the same as being mean.
No.
Being a racist is mean. It's under that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
But saying that you're a fucking fried orange Cheeto with a tiny ass dick who has no fucking shame, no sense of morality, you're a fucking spineless piece of shit, that's not the same as being a racist.
Yeah.
Sorry to burst your bubble.
Well, and so that ties into, like, Samantha Bee, then a couple of days later said,
she called
Ivanka Trump
a feckless cunt because Ivanka likes to come out publicly trying to be all positive and spin shit and basically just take the limelight off of the shitty things her dad's doing because that's basically her job. Like, Ivanka's very sweet and pretty and
soft. Yeah, but who cares about Ivanka?
Blah, blah,
like,
blah.
Fuck Ivanka.
Nobody gives a shit. But, like, she never addresses questions about the shitty stuff. Every time somebody tries to talk to her about it, she's like, nope, nope, nope. And so Samantha Bee was super frustrated, called her a feckless cunt, which in this country is a big deal. Please refer to beginning the intro about reclaiming cunt. Thank you.
Yes.
But either way, like, now Trump is calling for Samantha Bee to be canceled because she called his daughter a cunt.
Well, and so what's the thing that they were saying about that was, oh, you canceled Roseanne, but you're not willing to cancel Samantha Bee, and they're the same. They're the same thing. And
no, they're not. Also,
exactly.
Roseanne was on primetime network television. Samantha Bee is on cable TV.
Right.
They're two different worlds.
Yeah, for one.
Like, maybe, yeah, it was a little aggressive and crass. Being aggressive and crass is not the same thing as being a fucking racist piece of shit.
She has said cunt so many times on her show. Like, the fact that this is the thing you get pissed off at is just
a
distraction.
Just, it's pure timing.
Yeah.
It's pure timing.
It's just trying to distract away from Roseanne Barr and, like, the shitty,
well,
awful thing that she said.
Yeah, Roseanne Barr, like, that whole thing is distracting away from other things that are happening that are controversial, that Trump likes to sort of sweep under the rug by creating weird controversy for people to get outraged. Blah, 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 blah. I'm done.
Yeah.
This is annoying me.
Yeah. Okay. We can stop talking about it.
Let's talk about awesome things.
I just only wanted to talk about it because I just, you know, I kind of wanted to, like, stay apprised of what's going on a little bit and kind of how it's bleeding into stuff and how, like, how our president equates racism with just the word cunt being used, you know, in a on a fucking cable news show. Anyway, it is Pride Month.
It is Pride still.
In case
you guys were sick of the gayness, which none of our listeners would be, we're here to bring you some more gay.
Yeah, it's going to be a gay-ass month, yo. So,
gay,
I'm here.
All gay all the time.
All gay all the time through June. So you have a couple of more episodes of this and beyond. I mean, yeah, this will not be the last time, obviously, that we talk about people who are LGBTQIA+. But it is a month where we want to dedicate lots of time to it. So
very specifically.
Very specifically. I want to tell you today about somebody named Anne Lister. Have you ever heard of her?
I have not.
Anne Lister, also known as Gentleman Jack,
ooh,
was an out lesbian aristocrat, landowner, diarist, mountaineer, and traveler in Yorkshire in the early 1800s.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I know. When I found her, I was stunned.
Gentleman Jack?
Gentleman Jack. She is best known, besides her activities with women, among some other things, for inheriting and directing the renovation and landscaping of Shibden Hall, a large estate with tenants near Halifax in the West Riding of Yorkshire.
Which is, like, massively a male-dominated situation.
Yes, absolutely. And she inherited the estate from her uncle, James Lister. I know. I don't want to give too much more away, so I'm just going to jump in.
Okay.
I got a lot of this from scandalouswomen.blogspot because
sweet.
I felt like...
Blogspot?
Uh-huh.
All right.
It's all information that I corroborated with other research, but it's... She just formatted it in a way that I thought was really conducive to telling her story.
Yeah.
So also Autostraddle and Wikipedia provided some other information. But,
sweet.
So, as a child, Anne disdained the more feminine, quote-unquote, pursuits, such as embroidery and sewing. She preferred writing, walking, shooting, and playing the flute.
Walking was a masculine pursuit?
Apparently.
I guess so. If you think about, like, Pride and Prejudice, like Lizzie Bennet, that's early 1800s.
Yes,
she would go for walks and like long walks, and they'd be like, "What the hell?
Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, your dress
are
is dirty.
Are you exhausting
now?
Yourself?"
Yeah. So in 1804, at the age of 13, she was sent to an exclusive boarding school called the Manor School in York.
Ooh.
It was hoped that her time at the school would turn her from a rambunctious tomboy into a refined young lady.
How'd that work out?
Don't think it did. Anne proved to be a disruptive influence. Apparently she was just, like, really smart, and she would... You know, she could absorb the lessons more easily than her classmates, and then she would just interrupt everything and start talking and chattering, and they were like, fucking go away. And so...
You're a disruption.
Like, you were a fucking disruption.
Yeah, but I get it, and I'm bored, so...
Yeah, she was totally bored, and so she was just more interested in socializing than in studying, and as a punishment, she was banished to an attic room away from other girls.
Because she wanted to socialize with the girl. It's an all-girls school, I presume.
Uh-huh. So
that's a great place to send a lesbian.
Oh, like, yeah.
Lesbian. Woo!
I love this next line because it says, Anne wasn't lonely for long.
Nope.
Nope. Another student soon joined her in her attic lair. Her name was Eliza Rain, and she
Ooh,
was
that's
a
great name.
It's a great name. She was a biracial young heiress of white and Indian heritage from Madras. And soon the two teenagers were declaring themselves husband and wife, exchanging rings and vows.
Wow.
And Anne had come to terms with her sexuality at an early age. Apparently, something called romantic friendships were very common among young girls at this time, which I didn't know. But it was kind of like...
That's weirdly not surprising.
Yeah. It was seen as like this thing that young girls did to sort of prepare themselves for, you know, quote, actual relationships. Yes.
I mean, it's kind of like the modern equivalent today of girlfriends practicing kissing with their girlfriends so that they would be ready to kiss a boy.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
However, this was not the typical romantic friendship that often sprang up between young girls before they went on to get married. these relationships were socially acceptable, and obviously they were considered something that would prepare them for marriage. While most girls eventually grew out of it, I say that in quotes, some, like Anne Lister and Eliza Rain, never did. When Anne and Eliza were caught passing notes in class that left no doubt about the nature of their, quote, friendship, Anne was expelled.
Strong quotes.
Strong quotes.
Why? Because she was she like the more masculine of the two?
I assume because she was generally the aggressor. I mean, in all of her relationships, she was always
more conventionally masculine, like the traditional pursuer sort of. Like,
yes. So not that she cared. She was more than prepared to continue her education on her own, which she did. She became very fluent in science and Greek literature, like ancient Greek literature. She loved ancient Greek literature, which I learned through this is apparently something that a lot of gay people at the time loved.
Because of Sappho.
Because of, yes, exactly. So her relationship with Eliza, unfortunately, didn't last. Because of Eliza's mixed race background, she wasn't considered by Anne's family a suitable companion for her, which, yes, exactly. I found that so fascinating because it's like, it's not because she was a woman. It's because, but the other thing that you have to remember throughout this is that Anne comes from a wealthy family, so she can kind of get
Eliza if she's an heiress.
Right, but I mean, she can kind of get away with a lot of this behavior. And so the fact that...
Yeah, I feel like if you were biracial and wealthy at this time in England specifically, you were kind of somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is what I know from watching the movie Belle, which is just slightly before that, which is based off of the true story of Dido Belle Lindsay, who was half black and half white, and she came from gentry. And was raised, and there's like this great line that's like, how is it proper that I'm too high to dine with the servants, but too low to dine with my family?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the similar sort of situation. Like you're somewhere in between where you have the breeding and education of the wealthy gentry that you come from, but because of the color of your skin, you're somehow lower.
Yeah.
It's all some bullshit.
It is. It's a lot of bullshit. I find it...
But that's still so weird that it's not because she was a woman, it's because she was half Indian.
Right. It's really crazy. And as I get into this, you will see even more just how insane that is. So I especially found that interesting because the Wikipedia article that I found made no mention of any of her relationship with Eliza Rain. It just said that she attended the school, she was disruptive, and she was asked to leave.
That's Wikipedia didn't?
Yeah, that's what the Wikipedia article says.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? So they make no mention of any of that. So Eliza apparently expected to live with Anne once they were adults, but Anne began affairs with other women, especially women at the school, Isabella Norcliffe and Mariana Bellcombe.
She can't be tamed.
She cannot be tamed.
She had some of that wandering eye. I don't know.
Oh, she had a severe case of wandering eye. Weird tidbit, and I don't really know many of the details around this. I didn't have a lot of time to like go dive into this, but I'd like to at some point. In despair and frustration, apparently, Eliza was admitted as a patient at Clifton Asylum.
For hysteria, maybe?
Maybe. So she was just institutionalized after this and I think ended up passing away in the next couple of years in this asylum.
That's so sad.
Isn't that fucked?
I mean, asylums, especially at this time, notoriously sexist.
Yes.
And I'm sure also racist.
And homophobic. I mean, all of those things. But like, yeah, I find it really interesting that so many of these articles sort of blame it on her, like, devastation over being dumped, but obviously there are so much more going on
right
when it comes to that. So anyway, sort of, I guess, getting away from that very sad little piece of it, Anne became determined to find a companion, a life partner.
But not a man.
Right. She was lucky that, like Jane Austen's Emma, her wealth allowed her some measure of freedom to live as she pleased. So, you know, that's obviously something to think about in terms of her entire story. Like, if she were poor or...
She would have married a man if she was poor.
She would have had to.
Because you can't not get married as a woman in this time if you don't have money.
Exactly. So in 1813, at the age of 22, she became the heiress to her uncle's estate at Shibden Hall because her brother Samuel, the original heir, died in a boating accident.
Ooh, that's sad.
Yeah. So when she was born, she had 6 siblings. And all of them died except for her and her younger sister, Mariana. Very weird.
Weird time.
Yeah,
weird time.
It's a weird time. So by 1815, she had moved permanently to Shibden Hall to learn how to run the estate. Meanwhile, she had a checklist of what she was looking for in a mate. Someone who was her social equal, but also a feminine, pliable, demure woman.
Interesting.
Interesting.
She bought into that.
Uh-huh. Oh, she very much did. For Anne, church was a convenient place to find her latest conquest. Which I... Exactly. That's the reaction I had. Church? What?
Well, that's where you find pliable, demure women.
Absolutely. I love this. She would locate what she considered to be a suitable candidate, and then the wooing would commence. First, there would be invitations to tea at Shibden Hall, and then long walks through the woods as she furthered the acquaintances. Only after a suitable amount of time had passed would Anne make her move. In her diaries, Anne talks about her tactics for wooing women, how she would talk to them and charm them. She would mention books that touched upon lesbianism or male homosexuality, and then observe carefully to see how the women reacted.
That's so smart.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like being gay in this time period or queer, it's like... a very specific sort of game you gotta play, because you can't just be like today, be like, oh yeah, my girlfriend, like just toss that in. You have to very specifically like form a friendship, see if you can trust a person, then maybe sort of kind of casually be like, oh, this poet Sappho, have you read her stuff? She's great. And if they go like, oh no, I don't. And you're like, you know, only for the right person is she great, you know, blah, blah. But if it's like, really? No, tell me. It's like, great. We're here. Yes.
It's like so much time.
It takes a lot of time.
I mean, can you even imagine?
Because you can't just like make a move on someone. You have to gauge whether or not they're going to ruin your reputation or not.
Yeah, if they're going to fucking tell on you in a big way. But really, she had already met the love of her life in 1812. Marianne Belcombe, who I mentioned as one of the pupils.
That she had an affair with while she was with Eliza.
Mm-hmm. All right. They carried on an affair for a few years until Marianne localed...
Hello!
Until Marianne married a local landowner.
Local to Mary landowner.
she localed that shit.
She localed
real hard.
It was very, real Mary.
Oh, yeah, wow.
And they were localed.
They were localed very quickly. Okay. they carried on an affair for a few years until Marianne married a local landowner, Charles Lawton, in 1815 in order to up her societal status.
Oh, so she didn't come from money.
Mm-mm.
Right.
Anne looked down on Marianne's marriage as what she termed legal prostitution.
Ooh.
Which is rough.
Which?
I mean, you know, she was not doing it for love. She was doing it for money and status. Yeah, but nevertheless, she encouraged the marriage because of its obvious financial prudence. Charles apparently was like friendly with Anne at some point, like when he and Marianne first got married, but he broke off his friendly relations with Anne when he discovered that she and his wife hoped for his early death so that they could live together. Yeah.
I mean, that's rude.
That's pretty rude.
Of, like, when you live in a society that doesn't accept gay relationships, queer relationships, and it's like, yeah, I wish you would just die. Like, maybe you should wish that you lived in a time where you didn't have to marry him.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's fucked up.
Marry him in the first place so that you, like, he should be happy and too.
I mean,
come on.
Yeah. But after some time apart, Marianne soon reinstated her relationship with Anne when she realized that she was not going to have a child by her husband, who seemed to be infertile, and that he didn't even put her into his will, though she had signed her income over to him, which meant she would be destitute at his death.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. So eventually...
Also, Anne's not going to get you pregnant either.
Well, no. But, like, if she's going to be destitute anyway...
Might as well have a backup.
You know?
With someone that you actually care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But eventually, Anne apparently, like, went to him and wore him down. Which she seemed to be really good at. There's a lot of, like...
She seems very charismatic.
She's very charismatic and very persuasive. And Charles resigned himself to Anne's affair with his wife, even facilitating their travel together. And feigning,
what?
Yes, and feigning indifference when they would sleep together in his own house. So they just had this affair under his nose, and he was just like, all right, you guys go do your thing. It's fine. And the two women would often discuss, under pressure from Anne, Charles ensured that Marianne would receive a good annual income after his death, and the two women often discussed the details of pooling their resources during their passionate times together.
Like a married couple.
Like a married couple.
Yeah.
But Charles did not actually die as soon as they thought he would, and after some...
Hoped he would.
Hoped he would. After several years, Anne tired of Marianne, especially after she found out that she contracted venereal disease from her.
What?
Which Marianne got from her husband, which...
Because apparently he was also sleeping around.
Yeah, he was sleeping
around.
Well, I mean...
That's the thing, like, she is too, so...
Yeah, and it was fine for men, but not for women.
Also, that's not chill, you guys.
It's not chill, but apparently that's... I think that's probably why he was infertile.
That would make sense.
That would make sense. So, by 1826, her uncle passed away and Shibden Hall was relinquished to her. She was soon actively...
So now she's a landowner.
She's a landowner, yeah.
Which is unusual
that,
in and of itself.
Yeah, because it wasn't allowed at that point. Women were not, like, technically allowed to, buy their own land.
Yeah. They could inherit it,
They
though,
could
clearly.
Inherit it, but they couldn't buy it. But she was soon actively running the estate, carrying out renovations to make the house more livable. Apparently it was actually kind of a big deal, and there are articles dedicated to detailing all of the renovations that she made.
Specifically that she made.
She, like, redid the whole fucking thing. Like, she made it really nice. She managed her tenants and exerted her influence in local politics. Since, as a woman, she couldn't vote, she forced her tenants on her land to vote the way she wanted them to. So even though she wasn't voting, she basically had a vote.
That's insane to me. That, like, she outranked them in so many ways, but she had no right to vote.
Yeah. Bizarre. Isn't that fucking bizarre?
I mean, thank God for suffragettes, am I right?
So she was called Gentleman Jack by her neighbors in Halifax because her appearance, as she grew older, became more masculine as the years went on.
She was like, I don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
Leaning into this.
She started dressing much more, she started dressing in the full fucking suit and didn't give a shit. Land rich but cash poor, Anne decided to open a coal mine on her property and was soon going up against the big boys, proving that she could hold her own, which excited envy as well as fear. And then, since business started to boom...
Oh no, a lady's got an opinion and making money. We're scared.
She's got an opinion. She was making money. She was renovating this whole thing, like, making it really nice. Her tenants, I think, you know, lived in much better conditions than they did prior. Anyway,
yeah.
So yeah. She started to travel because she now had the money to do so.
Great.
She traveled all over Europe having a sordid affair with a beautiful French woman. And
why am I not surprised?
And you shouldn't be.
Sordid.
I mean,
that's a quote from whoever originally wrote that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, a lot of the things that she did were a little sordid. In 1830, she became the first woman to ascend Mont Perdu in the...
Mont Perdu, the Lost Mountain?
Mm-hmm, in the Pyrenees, and later completed the first, quote, official ascent of the, I don't know, you're gonna have to say that, Vignemal? V-I-G-N-E-M-A.
Vignemal?
I don't know.
You stumped me.
Which is 10,820 feet.
Vignemal? Vignemal?
I don't know, it's French.
Vignemal?
My God, stop.
Sorry. You asked me to contribute, and now I'm working through it like those kids at the spelling bee.
I did the worst thing.
Can you give me the etymology, please?
No.
The definition?
Nope.
Are there any other pronunciations?
Nope.
All right.
It's done.
Use it in a sentence?
No.
You are using it in a sentence, Hannah. Mm-hmm. You're just being obstinate.
I am. She completed that ascent with her wife at the time. And yes, I say wife intentionally.
Her wife at the time?
Mm-hmm. So
was
she...
Was it the French woman?
In the 1830s, she became the first woman to ascend Mont Perdu in the Pyrenees. And then later, she came back with her wife and made the first official ascent of the
Venemal?
Whatever. So, she became the first woman to be elected to the Halifax Literary and Philosophical Society.
Wait. Okay, never mind.
And all her life, she was fascinated by the latest gadgets and technology. In 1832, Anne met the woman she would spend the rest of her life with.
Oh, so Marianne wasn't the love of her life. You said she was the love of her life.
She was the love of her life.
All right. Well.
That doesn't mean that she was going to spend the rest of her life with her. Because she contracted venereal disease from that woman. Like, I wouldn't stay with her. In 1832, Anne met the woman she would spend the rest of her life with, a neighbor and another heiress, Anne Walker. So both
Anne and Anne.
Anne Walker was 29 to Anne Lister's 42.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Having had her heart broken by Marianne, Anne was not looking for a great love this time, but like most men of her class, she was looking for someone with money to help her realize her dreams for Shipton.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So Anne Lister began to woo Anne Walker, shaping her into the woman of her dreams. In 1834, they found...
I don't know how I feel about this.
I know. Well, she was very, like, kind of... It's weird because she was kind of, like, rigidly,
She was into gender roles, clearly.
But she didn't want
to adhere to them herself.
Yes.
She wanted to behave as a man of her era.
Yes. Isn't that weird?
But didn't want to be a man.
Mm-mm. No, she... I don't think she would have considered herself trans, especially because...
Well, I mean, that there was no framework for any of that.
No, but I think there were women, there were absolutely, you know, people who were born women who considered themselves men.
Well, like Albert Nobbs and stuff, right? Or, I don't know, I didn't see that movie. I don't know that story.
In 1834, they found a clergyman to bless their union, which...
What the day is hell?
Yeah, he blessed it, and they had friends and family attend their ceremony.
They got married.
They got fucking married.
Like, not legal married. They had a fucking, like, union ceremony.
Yes, ma'am.
Holy shit.
Yep.
This woman, Anne the Younger, never got married to a man?
Nope.
She literally married a woman.
She married a woman.
Without being legally married.
Correct. I mean, but in a lot of senses, they were. Anne Walker moved into Shipton Hall, and the Lister and Walker estates were joined. All their assets were joined up.
They were married and everything except legal paperwork.
Yep. Anne Lister caught a fever and died in 1840 in the foothills of the Caucasus Mountains in Georgia. Not the state, the country. And Anne Walker spent 7 months bringing her lover's body back to England.
Her wife's body.
I know, her wife, thank you. Yeah, this says lover. That's interesting, because they're from the same article. Anyway, Anne Walker spent 7 months bringing her wife's body back to England to be buried in the local parish church. And then she inherited her wife's estate.
Yep. Like a spouse would.
Like a spouse would.
All right.
Yeah. So that's not even the craziest. I just told you, like, her life story. But the craziest thing, the thing that she is kind of most known for...
Lay it on me.
...is that she wrote... she had a 4-million-word diary. So I think they said it was...
You said she was a diarist.
She's a diarist. She had books upon books upon books upon books of her diaries. And they... though they often, like, cataloged her daily life and what it was like to renovate Shipton Hall and all this stuff, they also talked about her exploits. They were, like, often very graphic. Super duper graphic.
Hot.
So, It began in 1806 as scraps of paper recording in secret code parcels sent to and from Eliza Raine, and eventually became the 26 quarto volumes ending at her death in 1840. In addition to her handwriting being incredibly difficult to decipher, around 1/6 of the diary is encrypted in a simple code that she and Eliza had devised, combining the Greek alphabet, the zodiac, punctuation, and mathematical symbols.
That's awesome.
Yeah, apparently it's super graphic and details her affairs and the tactics that she used for seduction.
Gay. I love it.
Super, super gay.
That's gay as fuck.
Women loving
women.
Yeah.
In graphic detail.
So I do have some entries of hers that I kind of want to read just a little bit of all after right. I'm done. But so the code used in her diary.
Not safe for work, y'all.
Yeah, not safe for work.
Okay, sorry.
So, the code used in her diaries was deciphered by the last inhabitant of Shibden Hall, John Lister, who died in 1933. Uh-huh. And a friend of his, Arthur Burrell, when the content of the secret passages was revealed, Burrell advised John to burn all the diaries. Can you believe that? He's like, this is so fucking gay. Burn, burn, burn. And John,
yeah, have a boner, burn it.
Burn it the fuck down. You got a little weird, it's okay. Apparently that's what these
gay,
diaries
burn
do.
It!
They make everybody a little weird.
Oh my god, this is sapphic as fuck! There's so many great memes about being gay because there's so much fragile masculinity. But there was the one that was like, you know that your lady has 50% of her DNA from her dad, so if you're into your lady, you're gay. Anyway.
Sorry, I was just trying to find my spot. Yes, so John Lister did not take this advice, but instead continued to hide Anne Lister's diaries behind a panel in Shibden Hall.
Ooh, that's smart.
I know. It is smart. It's like, I mean, I'm kind of glad that he wasn't so put off by how fucking graphic she was that he just was like, okay, bye. And they were found later, and then in 1988, historian Helena Whitbread shocked the academic world by publishing the first volume of her diaries, and the diaries were so graphic that they were considered a hoax until a great deal of evidence proved their authenticity.
Wow.
Yeah.
They were like, this is so gay, it can't be real.
It can't be real. And so since then, the diaries have shaped and continue to shape the direction of UK gender studies and women's history.
That's amazing!
Isn't that fucking incredible? Awesome. Because it's not just, obviously, like I said, that they talk about her day-to-day life, so...
But also serves as an instruction manual.
But yeah, I mean, it talks a lot about how, like, gay women found one another.
Which, as we've mentioned previously, was a trial.
Yeah, but this is, so I'm just going to read you a couple different of her diary entries, which Otto Straddle had listed. They picked like some good ones, so I was like, okay. This one is from the 29th of January, 1821. It says, arranging and putting away my last year's letters, looked over and burnt several very old ones from indifferent people. I burnt Mr. Montague's farewell verses so that no trace of any man's admiration may remain. It's just not meant for me. I love and only love the fairer sex, and thus beloved by them in return, my heart revolts from any other love than theirs.
Oh my god! She got love letters from men and was like, fuck this.
Bye. Yeah, she burned that shit. She was like, I don't want any trace of this anywhere near me.
I don't need a reminder.
I don't need a reminder. November 1824. She stands closer to me. I might easily press queer to queer. Our liking each other is now mutually understood and acknowledged.
Who's she talking?
She's talking about a woman that she had a short affair with, Mrs. Barlow or something like
queer
that.
To queer.
But in her journal, she used the word queer to mean vagina.
Oh, they were standing vagina to vagina, cunt to cunt.
Cunt to cunt.
Let's only exclusively use the word cunt.
The word cunt.
Vagina, because I'm obscenely offended.
By the history of
by the history of the word vagina. Gross!
Especially
if you're a lesbian, because that shit ain't a sheath for anything. Bye!
Very true. She does have a journal entry that I didn't put in here about, like, the use of dildos and how she doesn't understand why anyone would do that. Which I find, like, super funny. Actually, her problem with it was that apparently
was
sometimes
that it was a phallus.
They have to be surgically removed.
Oh no!
Which is why I didn't include it. Anyway,
it's not included.
Yeah.
Wait, okay. It can't have been very big.
Yeah. Oh, this one I like a lot.
Tell me.
Marianne cut the hair from her own queer, which, as we know now, means cunt.
Her own cunt.
And I that from mine, which she put each into each of the little lockets that we got at Bright's this morning, 12 shillings each.
Gross!
For us always to wear under our clothes in mutual remembrance. We both of us kissed each bit of hair before it was put into the locket.
Oh my God! They wore each other's pubes?
In a gorgeous little locket.
Ah, that's so weird. I kind of love it.
I know.
That's like epitome queer culture 1820s, right?
Yep.
1820s?
Yep, 1820s.
Woof! They can't... Well, I mean, just fucking... Whatever. I have no problem with pubic hair. I have a problem with hair that's removed from the body. Like, my hair that comes out of my scalp that I get from my shower drain, or, like, just even I'm like, ugh, like, hair that's not on a body? No, thank you. Hair on a body? Fine. Whatever. Like,
okay.
I mean, I have really, whatever. I sound like I'm anti-pubic hair. I'm not in any way. I have tons of it. Cool. Right now,
Okay, last. I have a couple more, but I think this is just going to be my last one. And I found.
Just saying, it's weird that they cut it off and kissed it and wore it.
Yeah, it's super fucking weird.
Thank you.
It's super weird.
That's
why I put it in here, because no one does that shit. It's fucking strange. But it was just like, hey man, I don't know. It's what they did.
Holy shit.
So this one I thought was really, really interesting. And it's a little bit longer. It says, a long prose just before getting into bed. I talked of the abuse I had for romance, enthusiasm, flattery, manners like those of a gentleman, being too particularly attentive to the ladies, etc. That in consequence, I had resolved to change and had succeeded in becoming much more cool and cautious in my general intercourse with people, and much less lavish of cordiality and civility.
Aww.
I asked her if, after all of this, their lovemaking, she would own being in love with me. She said no, she did not like the term, but clasped me in her arms. We kissed and fell asleep.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
I know. Said it was all nature. Had it not been genuine, the thing would have been different. I said, I had thought much, studied anatomy, etc., could not find it out, could not understand myself. It was all the effect of the mind. No exterior formation accounted for it. Alluded to there being an internal correspondence or likeness of some of the male or female organs of generation, alluded to the stones not slipping through the ring till after birth, etc. And all of that is sort of explained as Anne was very involved in the historical and scientific community and wrote much about possible explanations for being gay. And so that passage is kind of her speculating on why on earth she might possibly be attracted to women and not men, you know, and she's saying...
When, like, biologically speaking, the prevailing sort of mentality was like, well, this is what humans are for.
Right, and
the purpose of humanity is for procreation. Like,
yeah.
Then, well,
she couldn't find any biological reason for her to feel that way, like there was nothing outside of her physical being that made sense in that respect to her, and so...
Except for the fact that she was gay as fuck.
Yeah, so she spent a lot of time thinking about that and what, you know, what the scientific meaning behind that was.
But what's fascinating to me is that she was only into women who were super femme.
Uh-huh.
Which there are a lot of lesbians who are.
Yeah. But she, but
which
the,
is
she was
weird.
Very specific
or like,
about that.
Or like gay men who are super into, they say like mask only. Like masculine, like they don't want flaming queens. They don't want men who present feminine, which is interesting. Like it's an interesting sort of like conversation to be had about queer culture in general.
Yeah.
Like when you buy into that sort of.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially
which,
because.
You know, that's it.
Like she specifically was so, she was very non-binary. She didn't like.
Clearly.
She didn't conform to gender roles as they were dictated at the time.
To her.
To her.
But she wanted her female partners to.
Yeah. which is just such an
She wanted to exert dominion over them, weirdly.
Yeah. It's
She's a fascinating person.
Yeah. She's very fascinating. Obviously, again, like, she, without her wealth, I think, obviously, this stuff wouldn't be possible for her and wasn't possible for people at the time.
Absolutely.
Many people at the time.
Absolutely.
But I just, you know, I don't know. I just found it really fascinating that she was this woman in the early 1800s who was having a marriage with another woman for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
And it was considered fine by
like
her
she
friends
had
and family.
Farmers on her property voting for her.
Mm-hmm.
Who were like, oh yeah, the lady of the house and her lady.
/ the man of the house because she used to dress so masculine.
But would they refer to her as the man of the house?
I mean, I'm sure they just referred to
well,
her
they did
as
call her Gentleman Jack.
Jack.
Right. You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right. You're right.
You're right. You're right. You're right. Yeah, so.
Ann Lister, man.
That's Ann Lister /
Fuck.
Gentleman Jack.
Crazy.
I know.
Mountaineers.
Mountaineers, indeed.
Am I right?
Am I right? Yeah.
That was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me give you a few.
Give me some history.
On this day in histories. I should double check which day this is because I
June.
Apparently didn't write it down.
13th.
Yeah. Yeah, well
done. Boom, I can do math.
Well done. All right, so on this day in history, June 13th, 1777, the Marquis de Lafayette arrives in the American colonies to help in their rebellion against Britain.
That goes pretty well, I hear.
Yeah.
Lafayette?
Yeah, yeah. I included this next one because, honestly, like, it boggles my mind that this is the only kind of shit that anyone thinks to include as specific to women on any of these, like, on the stand history lists.
Okay.
1789, Mrs. Alexander Hamilton serves ice cream for dessert to George Washington.
You mean Eliza? Eliza Schuyler?
It says Mrs. Alexander Hamilton.
Her name was Eliza Schuyler.
You see why it's so fucking fascinating? That's one of the only things that I could find that related to a female at all. And it's all about how she served something to another person and couldn't even get her fucking name. 1917, World War One, the deadliest German air raid on London during World War One is carried out and results in 162 deaths.
Germany, get it together.
Yep. I thought this one was just fucking weird and hilarious.
Bring it.
In 1920, the U.S. Post Office officially says children cannot be sent by parcel post. They cannot be mailed. This day.
They could before?
Before they could.
People could
be
ship
mailed.
Children in boxes?
You could mail your child.
Can you even mail puppies? I mean, you can. But, like, there's special things.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
That's insane! 1920? It took that long?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I thought that was fucking bizarre as shit. 1967, Thurgood Marshall is nominated as the first African-American Supreme Court justice.
Cool.
And then I thought this one was funny. 1995, Jagged Little Pill by Alanis Morissette is released.
Hell yes, Hannah! That's so appropriate!
Isn't that great?
You know they're making a musical of it, right?
What?
Like a jukebox musical. Jukebox musical. Jagged Little Pill is what it's called.
Oh my god.
I think.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, what are you excited about this week?
Nerdy shit, as per usual. Let me tell you a thing. So, I got some comics this week that I'm very excited about. She looks at the person who bought her comics. So I started reading the newest incarnation of Miss Marvel, which came out in 2014. Was the first one that I just finished reading, and now I'm starting to read the second, like, volume.
Mm-hmm.
And so Miss Marvel, they're making the Captain Marvel movie with Brie Larson playing Captain Marvel. She's a pilot, right? She's a pilot?
Captain Marvel?
I don't know what they're doing.
Oh, great. Well, Captain Marvel in general is a pilot.
Yeah.
She used to be Miss Marvel, and so the new Miss Marvel is basically about a girl from New Jersey. You don't like that? She's a girl from New Jersey who was inspired by the Avengers and inspired by Miss Marvel, who became Captain Marvel, She is, it's very modern, and she is like a young Pakistani American, and she gets granted powers and decides to be the new Miss Marvel. And so it's like the US's first Muslim American superhero, and it's fucking great. Like, she's super cool. And I mean, I'm literally just getting started, but it makes me so happy deep in my soul. Like, there's a line that she has where she's like, Jersey doesn't run. And it's like the most classic, where we're like, what the fuck do you think you're doing? And she's like, I'm from New Jersey, bitch. I don't run. And it's like the best. She doesn't say it that way. She's much more eloquent. Mm-hmm. But she's like a teenager and she wants to go to parties and her parents are from Pakistan and they're like, no. And she like makes a comment where she's like, if I was a boy, you'd let me go. But she has an older brother and her older brother is super religious, but he's still at home. So her parents are like, why the fuck do you still live here? Get out, you bum. And he's like, oh, but I can't because, you know, and they're like, get out of the house. It's, but it's super great. And her family super cares for her. But I think it's really cool that, and you know, fucking middle America Trump supporters are going to go nuts.
Oh God.
But if they, so the Captain Marvel movie that they're making is set in the 90s.
Okay.
Which makes it entirely appropriate for this Miss Marvel to have been inspired in the 90s, like by a person who was alive in the 90s.
Yep.
So if they wanted to introduce her, she could exist. I'm also reading The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which they're making a show on Freeform Squirrel Girl in it, which Squirrel Girl is a weird superhero, and I love her.
Yeah.
She is half squirrel, half human.
What the fuck?
She has the powers of a squirrel, so she can run really fast and climb trees. She's obsessed with the Avengers. She lives in their attic. The word is out as to whether or not they know she lived there. But it's basically like her going to college and trying to be a normal person. But she has a squirrel tail.
And
she tucks it in her pants it makes her look like she has a huge butt. But she's really cute and she basically she doesn't want to fight people if she doesn't have to. Like there's like a Marvel villain that comes into play like pretty much immediately in the first one that I read that she's like, wait. All you want to do is hunt monsters, right? But you only want to hunt Spider-Man? Why don't you hunt villains? And he's like, that's a good point. I could do that. And so she like, instead of fighting him, she convinces him to go fight others that are doing bad. Bop, 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 bop.
I like it. Shall we
sign off?
Out?
Yeah.
All right.
Why not?
Okay.
That's a thing.
Well, then let's get the fuck out of here.
All right.
Okay. Peace out, witches.
Bye, 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 bye. You always say peace out, witches. I never say it.
I know, you could.
Peace out!
Witches!
Bitches.
Oh, you're gonna say bitches?
No. But I did.
We could.
Bye, witches! No. Damn it! Let's start over.
Thank you for listening to Good Witches, Bad Bitches.
Thank you for listening.
You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Blueberry, and more.
Basically anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Mm-hmm. If you like our podcast, it would be really helpful if you could please like and subscribe, rate and review, share with your friends on social media, word of mouth, all of that. It's great.
Yes, and you can find us on Twitter at GWBB Podcast. Instagram is the same, and we are on Facebook under Good Witches, Bad Bitches Podcast.
And hey, guess what? If you want to hear all of our episodes, they are all up at our website, gwbbpodcast.com.
If you have a story about a woman in your life that you want to share with us and that you want us to share on our podcast at some point, you can email us at gwbbpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey guys, you know what? If you like what you hear, maybe please consider a little bit of supporting us financially by visiting our tip jar. The link is in the show notes. Every little bit helps. It just kind of makes it so that we can keep this going so that it has some longevity. So just think about it. See how you feel about it.
Or you can support this podcast directly by buying us a coffee on
our Ko-Fi.
So that is ko-fi.com/GWBB podcast. Coffee start at $3 because that's generally the price of a fancy coffee, and it just helps us keep the ship going. Good Witches, Bad Bitches is produced by Moon Bounce and powered by Pinecast.
Boom, boom, boom.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for listening.